So it's the Truth About Markets once again.
Truth About Markets again, yeah. Residence 104.4, Max and Stacy, that's right.
We're here in Paris still. Everybody else is gone. We seem to be the only ones. It's like a kind of horror film.
Yeah, it's that peripheric, you know, that highway that goes around Paris. You can't escape it. It's like a magnetic force field trapping us.
We're trapped inside here, and we're at the cafe where some man, the chef, as he's known, he's blending up. It looks like some sort of soup in that that blender there. You might hear that in the background.
Yeah, you might hear the blender in the background. This is the guy who, I don't know if we've mentioned him before, but he's constantly sneezing into the food. We call him Mr. Sneezy.
We do call him Mr. Sneezy.
We don't eat here when he's the chef because he's constantly sneezing into the food.
Yes, we'll point it out whenever he sneezes.
You'll hear him sneeze, yeah, no doubt. I think it's all the pepper they use, you know.
Yeah, you're being polite there.
Could be. Or he's just, a sneezing, dribbling, snot-wielding chef that is causing all kinds of discomfort and gastrointestinal problems.
So, Max, anyway, this week's On the Edge is getting quite a lot of, positive feedback. You interviewed Dmitry Orlov and Dr. Housing Bubble. Anything you want to say about any of that?
Yeah, and I just actually posted a blog to Huffington Post. The theme this week for me is slavery. Slavery is the theme because there's a couple of stories in Huffington Post today. One is that wages in America are continuing to go down. So the unemployment number is a bit of a misnomer, whether it's up or down or the way it's misstated. You know, the big really reality of it is that the average wages are going down. The number of people who are falling below the poverty line in America is increasing. The people who are considered the working poor, which is homeless people who have a job, that number is increasing. The uninsured, of course, people without health care. But I think they need to introduce a new statistic, which is the number of people who have fallen into penury or debt slavery. So if you figure 50 million Americans are now either poor or working poor, that would mean, let's say, maybe 5% of that number, or 2.5 million people are now, I think you can consider to be debt slaves, who will never in their entire lives ever escape debt and are indentured servants. And therefore, slavery in America is once again legal, and it's being orchestrated by the Wall Street banks, who took all the bailout money and forced or coerced everyone else to borrow to subsist. When you are borrowing to subsist, that's indentured servitude. That's debt slavery, which is the same as slavery. So slavery is legal again in America.
Well, speaking of slavery, I don't know if you saw this article, which I posted just now to maxkaiser.com, which is that there's going to be a parliamentary inquiry into this work-for-free internships, and they're examining whether or not they're exploiting young graduates from university.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've discussed this many times as the Hollywood model, where they get the new, you know, entrant into this market to work for free for a few months in Hollywood and television, and also apparently in finance, a lot of finance. So all the jobs that lead to oligarchy, or the too big to fail banks, or the monopolies of Hollywood, they're exclusive clubs for the children of other famous people or the rich, right? So that's why I think the inquiry will fail, because they're looking to see if it's exploiting the people taking these free to work jobs.
Yeah.
When in fact that's not the purpose of it. It's not exploitation. It's about weeding out the poor who they don't want in their cast.
Well, it's the lottery model. So in Hollywood, people are willing to work for nothing if they have a chance at winning the lottery, which is that you've got a hit TV show or a hit movie and you make $50 million. That's the lottery in Hollywood. Same thing on Wall Street. You're willing to work for nothing for a few years with other people on Wall Street for a chance at winning the lottery. That's obviously the business model of Las Vegas and the entire gambling industry. And as the gambling industry has been spread out over the finance industry, giving banks and the public a chance to participate in this online gambling casino gulag economy that's been now prevalent in America for 15 years. This idea of a wage that supports savings and family and growth in an organic way has been replaced with the casino gulag model, where people are willing to work for free to win the lottery. And you're going to see this continue. You know, that's why people won't vote against the reemergence of slavery in America. If all the slaves on in the South during the plantation era of America, if they had introduced a lottery for all the slaves working on the plantations in America in the South during the 17th and 18th and 19th century, the slaves would not have voted against slavery, because a critical mass of the slaves would have held out to win the so-called lottery. And you see that in America today, and you see that in places around the world where this casino gulag model is in place. As long as you hold out hope that someone's going to win the lottery, no one's going to vote against being imprisoned, themselves being imprisoned. And that's just the psychology of it. It goes back to Freud and the emergence of the... you know, his work on the psychoanalysis, which uncovered the irrational mind, which was used by Madison Avenue to sell. Remember, we saw that show. They used it to sell cigarettes to women, because they convinced women that in order to be equal to men, they needed to give themselves breast cancer and lung cancer. And women absolutely bought that hook, line, and sinker. And as long as they convinced the slaves that they might win the lottery, no one's going to bust out of the debt slavery. It's just psychology, and in World War II, the work of Freud was called propaganda, and they even had a propaganda minister in the Third Reich. And then the same guy who brought it to the Third Reich, Edward Bernays, who was the nephew of Sigmund Freud, brought it to America, and they rebranded it after the Nazis trashed the brand of propaganda. They rebranded this notion and called it public relations, and it's alive and active today.
Yeah, that's funny. They did target women with advertisement, and that was the first real successful big campaign, and it was all Edward Bernays. But and you know, scientists will still tell you that women have a harder, more difficult time giving up smoking, and they say it's because women smoke for emotional reasons, whereas men have an easier time because they're doing it they smoke for other reasons. So that emotional reason is obviously where why they started smoking in the first place, is via advertising that appealed to their emotions.
Yeah, and the Edward Bernays connection and the Sigmund Freud connection and the discovery of the irrational subconscious and unconscious mind, the very primitive id of the schema developed by Freud, is really what dictates the economic policies and social policies. And I know from working on Wall Street, the sales process of selling people stocks that they really shouldn't own completely involves appealing to their irrational mind. Nobody buys stocks because it's a good idea. If someone's buying a stock from a broker, first of all, that's a really stupid idea, because the broker is simply selling you something that's going to give him the highest possible commission. And the way to sell a stock or a bond is the same rule as selling a car or cigarettes. You have to appeal to the irrational side of the buyer. And this means basically figuring out who the buyer is, doing a profiling the buyer, and then creating a sales pitch that will have them emotionally and irrationally buy a stock that really they have no business buying to begin with. And this is the way sales are done. And unfortunately, that technique is now on the industrial scale. So you have, for example, the managers of these large pension accounts who get calls from Goldman Sachs and other Wall Street banks who appeal to their irrational mind, and they get them to buy hundreds of millions of dollars worth of worthless paper from Wall Street. We just saw this with CalPERS. You know, 2 years ago, CalPERS, which is the largest pension fund in California, they were buying junk from Bear Stearns. And we, at the time on this show, we said they're being sold junk from Bear Stearns, and CalPERS presents themselves as being a quote-unquote socially responsible fund. And they're buying junk from Bear Stearns. All that junk went bad. Bear Stearns went bad. And now, CalPERS, to make up for the losses, they've come out and said, we're going to take bigger risks. So, you know, why don't they just, you know, start smoking heavily, popping pills, and dangling themselves from a noose over a drawbridge and see if that works out? They're just engaging in completely risky behavior with this lottery mentality. Well, we might win the lottery. Well, they're not going to win. They're going to lose all the money from the pension account, and those people are going to be smacked down in the mud. It's part of the emergent debt slavery class.
Well, actually, it's as Dr. Housing Bubble was saying, though, you know, the crisis in California, which is somewhere between the eighth and the fifth biggest economy in the world, depending on who's claiming it, but their CalPERS always argues, you know, it's constitutionally required that those obligations to the pensioners on CalPERS are the taxpayer of California is obliged to pay it no matter what, including in a situation like now where the economy has collapsed and California has basically collapsed. So they're getting rid of schools, they're getting rid of like fire departments, police departments, whatever it takes to pay those pensioners. So it's not the CalPERS pensioners themselves that lose; it's the rest of the citizens of California who lose because of CalPERS wild bets. And you see that those contracts are considered sacrosanct. Every other contract is avoided, but like with AIG, that was the argument with AIG, because they didn't go bankrupt, and if you went bankrupt and declared Chapter 7 or Chapter 11, you know, all of those contracts would be voided. But AIG executives say that we were owed these bonuses, and that's why even though you gave us $185 billion from the government, we still get our billions in bonuses because we have a contract. So that's the other emergence you see happening, is that these, as our economy has become clearly not capitalist, but more like either crony capitalists or oligarchies. It's those connected to those in power, which is government, because government has the power to kill you, to execute you, to start wars, to lock you up. And those closest to power get all the wealth and the safety and the safety net.
Right. Well, the pensioners who think that they've got contracts that guarantee them a certain payout, they are going to get screwed in the end, because, okay, they're shutting down the schools, the fire department, the police department, the infrastructure to pay off those contracts to CalPERS. And when that's not enough, then they're just going to flood the system with more money. So hyperinflation is going to kill the retirees in the end. So you might get your guaranteed pension return, your money, but the purchasing power of the dollar is going to drop another 90 to 95%. And by the way, the U.S. dollar made a 2009 low this past week, as China is rumored to be demanding from the U.S. all future bond transactions between the two countries priced in the Chinese currency, yuan, and not the U.S. dollar. This is a really interesting story over there at the Golden Jackass, written by Jim Willey, who's been on top of this for a number of months now, talking about really China's re-architecting of the global currency grid, and they don't want any more U.S. dollars or any more U.S. dollar bonds. They're going to demand from the U.S., as is the case right now from Japan. Japan gets from the U.S. bonds priced in yen. So China, they get their way. They get bonds priced in yuan, and suddenly the demand for dollars takes another huge hit. And the U.S. dollar, this is what's going to happen, Stacey. You know, at the end of 2008, remember Hank Paulson went before Congress and extorted $700 billion for Goldman's bonus pool. Mm-hmm. And the money that came in from Congress, which then quickly became $13 trillion, gave the economy a sugar high. And people are saying, oh, there's green shoots, there's growth in the second quarter. This growth is nothing more than the reflation of the bubbles, which are at their root baseless in terms of having any true economic components such as capital formation, capital expense, savings, or growth in any meaningful way. When this sugar high wears off, in the third quarter of this year, the bank stocks are going to take another huge plunge because they're going to say, oh my God, it wasn't $13 trillion that we had in bad debts. It was $30 trillion. As Carl Denninger says over at his blog, the true gap between the debt and the equity ratio in the system is probably closer to $20 to $30 trillion. At that point, because even whoever is the current chairman of Goldman Sachs or the Treasury Department head will be unable to coerce Congress to fork over any more easy money, they're going to have a bank holiday, which means they're going to have to close all the banks around the world as the dollar plunges, and they're going to have to go on a bank holiday this fall. And the result of that will be a devaluation of the dollar in a huge way. And America at that point will go, in 1 week, it'll just wake up and they'll be find themselves in, as a second-class citizen in the global economy. It's going to happen in 2 weeks.
Well, most Americans and most people around the world, of course, believe that kind of stuff is conspiracy theory, even though you can look at Dow Jones Market Watch, owned by Murdoch, and, you know, it's one of the main sites for bankers to go to. Or Wall Street Journal. You go to Wall Street Journal, you often find these stories there because they have to warn rich people. They protect each other, don't they? So on Market Watch, Dow Jones Market Watch, they were one of the first people to break this story about the rumors of a bank holiday coming in September or October, because the U.S. State Department told all embassies around the world, except for in the U.K., that they have to stock up on local currencies, like enough to survive for a year.
Well, conspiracy theories always come before conspiracy facts.
That's right.
Yeah, a conspiracy, there's nothing, there is such a thing called a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy to commit crimes.
Well, that's exactly what, what's the former governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer, when he was interviewed on Bloomberg a week or two ago, and he was asked about, oh, Matt Taibbi's article about Goldman Sachs, and the Bloomberg people said, oh, you know, it's a conspiracy, isn't it? And he said, well, conspiracies, just because it's a conspiracy doesn't mean it's true. Conspiracies happen. That's what, you know, we take people down all the time for conspiracies.
Exactly. Conspiracies, even Adam Smith talked about conspiracies and the propensity of businessmen to commit conspiracies, to be involved in conspiracies, to collude and price fix, etc. And the mainstream media, of course, will report on conspiracy facts after the fact, after the conspiracy has been revealed. Those who try to warn people about coming disasters, that, of course, is a theory. It's a theory of a conspiracy on the horizon. The only question is, what kind of track record do people have in predicting conspiracy fact before it happens? And there are people out there who have their ear to the ground and have been very accurate in predicting conspiracy facts during a period of time when most consider the facts that to be theory. I mean, if you read Peter Schiff's Crash Proof, for example, that book came out in the late 2006, I believe, and he details page after page after page a theory about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac collapsing, and he gives you why, the prices, the timeline, and it's a beautiful theory. And 2 years later, every single point in those chapters became conspiracy fact. And that's just one of the, or two chapters of his book, Crash Proof, which I'd say most of the, Peter Schiff has another theory. It's called decoupling, that China is going to spend all their stimulus money on domestic consumption, which is going to give them the ability to survive the global downturn and emerge as a winner ahead of the U.S. on the other side of this crisis. That's his theory. And it looks like the theory is becoming fact. So, you know, Peter Schiff certainly, I think, has earned his place as somebody who is willing to take educated guesses based on research, good research and good... if you're trying to outperform the masses, you have to take an educated guess and go forward accordingly. If you just stick with the mob and do exactly as the mob does, you're going to You're just going to sink down with the mob into indentured servitude. So.
Well, one more thing on that conspiracy theory notion is that, or conspiracy fact, is this, in particular in the U.S., it's really used as a way to, you know, allow all these grand thefts to happen without, and, you know, suspension of civil liberties, like the fact that this, what's just emerged in the last week, is that Dick Cheney was trying to get Bush to order the U.S. military to go into Vermont and or New Hampshire and arrest some citizens, which is totally against everything that is supposed to be in the Constitution.
Right.
And yet, like, there's the New York Times wrote an editorial about it, shocked and outraged. But very few Americans are willing to even talk about it. You don't see anybody writing about it on Daily Kos or Huffington Post at all. Because, why? Because Alex Jones and those people have been talking about it for over a year. They've been talking about it for a few years, that the military, they've noticed all sorts of military activity within the U.S. So they themselves, the Daily Kos crowd, the Huffington Post crowd, have declared them conspiracy theories. So that the facts are... the conspiracy facts are now true. They don't want to talk about it because it's they've already, in their own mind, through the help of the conspirators, they've been declared conspiracy theories. So they think it's, you know, they can't, they've already said that that doesn't matter, that it's wacko.
Yeah, well, the Alex Jones phenomenon is very interesting. You know, I've been listening to him for a few years now, and because he covers a lot of information. He has a lot of guests on his show that I've been following, guests from the financial punditry world, like Bob Chapman, who's been around for years. You know, he's had Peter Schiff on the show. He has Mark Faber on the show. And these people I follow also, and they go on Alex Jones' show, and I listen to his show, and then I listen to everything else Alex Jones is saying. And the thing about Alex Jones is that a few years ago, he was warning people about the New World Order. And the New World Order is somewhat of a nebulous group, a cabal made up of folks like the Bilderberg Group, etc. And, okay, again, these guys like the Rothschilds and those bankers and those folks have been around for a while, and that the Bilderberg Group has been around for really a long time, and the idea that you have this group of elites controlling, pulling the strings of the power in the country and around the world is not a new idea. Now Alex Jones kind of picked up the ball and ran with it. Then his message got a little bit more refined starting a couple of years ago. He started to talk about the banksters, which is a subset of the New World Order, and then it became more specific what he was saying. Also, things like the global currency, the emergence of a global currency, which a couple of years ago looked far-fetched, is now, the last G8 meeting, they're actually introduced a new world currency gold coin. You know, so they're actually moving toward that in a real way. Now, the message is becoming even more refined. We're going from New World Order to banksters to Goldman Sachs. And as I said on Alex Jones' show last year, you don't need to say New World Order, just say Goldman Sachs. That's the epicenter of this emergence of a neo-feudal, neo-punary debt slave model. That's 85 Broad Street in Manhattan is the epicenter of this, of the collapse of democracy and capitalism. Goldman Sachs, remember, they don't represent capitalism, they represent feudalism. And they are imposing that model of debt slavery, of slavery. They're bringing slavery back in America. And I just wrote this on my Huffington Post story, that Goldman Sachs is bringing slavery back to America. So anyway, Alex Jones, I mean, to talk about the only problem Alex Jones has is that he's from Texas, and, you know, he doesn't write for the New York Times. Now, the fact that the New York Times is 2 years behind Alex Jones it's not a negative against Alex Jones. It's a negative against the New York Times. Why is the New York Times so far behind the news? They're like 2 years behind the news.
Well, the other thing, we've been watching this, I watched this series with you. Sometimes you fall asleep. called The Universe, Discoveries of the Universe. And it's two series of 18 episodes. And one of the episodes is called Cosmic Apocalypse. And it talks about, it's really mind-blowing, actually, to watch it. It discusses the laws of physics. There's two basic laws of physics. And the second one is that anything that could possibly happen will happen, basically, if you give it long enough time. And the universe, you know, this universe has only been here for 14 billion years, but they don't know if it could, you know, we've had trillions and trillions of years of various universes and whether or not there are other universes around the world. But that's the good thing about theorists, whether in science or finance or politics, as people who imagine things, because you can imagine it, they will happen. It's likely to happen given a long enough time frame.
Well, on Zero Hedge website, it says, on a long enough timeline, the survival rate for everyone drops to zero. What do you think about that?
Well, it's the same with every single atom and neutron in your body and proton, to humans, to the Earth, to our solar system, to the universe, to the galaxy, to the galaxies, to the universe, and everything will collapse. But then it starts again.
By the way, I'm in touch with Tyler Durden.
Tyler Durden.
Yes, Tyler Durden of ZeroHedge.com. I'm in touch with Tyler. And no, Tyler's going to be a guest on our show, On the Edge. We don't know exactly when, but he's going to be a guest. And, of course, he's an anonymous figure out there, so we have to be careful to maintain his anonymity.
Yeah, that's the first rule of Financial Fight Club, isn't it?
Financial Fight Club, that's right. You can't mention Financial Fight Club.
So we're going to have to keep that episode secret.
That episode will be secret, but we do. I am in touch. And,
Perhaps we'll find out that it is actually you interviewing yourself, and you don't even know that you run Zero Hedge.
Well, that's an amusing conspiracy theory that I can guarantee you will not become conspiracy fact.
Sure. That's what you would say, of course.
No. I tell you that Zero Hedge has stuff that is really good. I mean, the Zero Hedge and Carl Denninger. I mean, Carl Denninger is basically somebody who really is conversant in the mechanics of the banking system in a way that, you know, he could easily be working on the other side, you know, for the enemy. You know, he could be working for the occupation instead of the resistance and making a lot of money. But I think in the case of Carl Denninger, who's also been a guest on our show and who we feature on this week's show that'll be airing next Friday, he's somebody who could easily be working for the occupation but instead chooses to work for the resistance. Similarly with Zero Hedge, obviously it's a very resourceful guy who's plugged in who could be working for the occupation but and chooses to work for the resistance. Similarly, I mean, I was working for the occupation, and I was doing fine doing so. But it got boring after a while. The resistance is just the more fun. There's nothing really challenging about making money in a slave state. You just get a bunch of slaves, and you don't pay them anything.
Well, again, you know, we always talk about history. You look at history, and there's several thousand years of U.S. history, and looking back on it, it looks like a whole collection of conspiracy facts. And the norm is for conspiracies and for occupation and for repression and for men mostly to do very evil things against the population. That's the norm
right.
of the time.
And then there was this incredible anomaly that occurred in the 18th century in the colonies of Britain, of North America. And something was created that had never been tried before. Government buying for the people. And it lasted more than 200 years before finally in the year 2000 it collapsed.
Well, actually there were other times in history as well that were very peaceful and interesting. And there was a lot of flourishing of ideas, including during the Islamic Empire. When there were a lot of, you know, maths were created and lots of science and there was lots of religious freedoms
Well, the Islamic Empire, as it stretched into Spain, gave us the period in Spanish history where you had Islam, Judaism, and Christianity all completely peacefully coexisting for quite a long time.
And there were also times during Alexander the Great, also times during Roman empires, various periods throughout history where there was like a few decades of peace and prosperity for all.
Yeah, but, you know, this does rely on the benevolent dictator model.
Yeah.
Which the idea behind the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights is that this benevolent dictator could be distributed to the majority of the population to act, as Lincoln said, according to the angels of their better nature, to create a more perfect union. But unfortunately, it's finished in 2000. That's the way I see it. I see America...
I think it was finished long before then, especially once, I guess from 1913, really. You know, once they introduced the Federal Reserve and then income taxes to pay for the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
And then it became corrupt, and everybody was after becoming a banker so that they could steal from the rest of the population, because it was the only way to get ahead once inflation then set in.
Yeah, 1971, they closed the gold window. And that was because they couldn't afford the Vietnam War. There should have been a massive depression in the 70s in America because of the mistake of going into Vietnam. But instead, Nixon just said, well, we just don't want to ever... They introduced this notion of debt slavery, which it was able to defer that mountain of debt for 30 years. But then this mountain of debt is now going to be in one fail swoop revalued with a U.S. dollar devaluation this fall. And that's going to make up for 30 years of profligacy. Is that the right word?
Profligacy.
Profligacy, right.
Well, you know, so the point we're at now is similar to 1968-69 when the U.S. was still on the gold standard internationally for trade.
Yeah.
And you had two large holders of U.S. dollars, the U.K. and France. They both held about $300 million in U.S. IOUs. Now, this is the equivalent today of China and Japan, each owning over $1 trillion now.
Yeah.
At the time, Charles de Gaulle declared that the U.S. had an exorbitant privilege, and he figured that they were, by having the U.S. dollar standard, and he reckoned that they didn't have all the gold to back up the $600 million he knew they owed between France and the U.S., right, and the U.K.
Yeah.
So de Gaulle asked for his gold, and they sent a French naval ship to the New York Harbor to go get their gold.
That's right.
And in order to avoid turmoil and avoid losing face, the U.S. gave the $300 million in gold to France.
Yep.
Within weeks, the U.K. then asked for their $300 million in gold. And, of course, they lost. So that's a historical lesson that Japan and China must take into account, because only one of them is going to get anything of value.
Yeah. Well, that's a good synopsis of really... the story with the U.S. dollars, fiat currency, gold, and, of course, what we found out making our film about Gordon Brown, who sold half of Britain's gold at the worst possible price of the past 50 years, $250 an ounce. We found out when we visited the Bundesbank in Germany, what did we find out? Something very interesting. Tell the people.
Well, we went to the Bundesbank March, I think it was 18th, 2008, and it was on Friday, or that weekend, it was a Monday, March 18th, maybe it was March 19th, Bear Stearns collapsed, and on Sunday night, the Fed slashed interest rates by 75 basis points on a Sunday night. We had a meeting with the head of the gold department at the Bundesbank on that Monday morning at 10 a.m., when we showed up at the Bundesbank, however, they were in a state of panic. and they weren't allowed to speak anymore about gold because of the turmoil. And gold, remember, had shot up to 1,034 on this news. So they weren't allowed to speak at all.
That's right. That they weren't allowed to speak. And they also mentioned that they were nervous additionally because of where their gold was held.
It was held in New York. But the reason why we were actually going there to speak to them was not just in general about gold. It was we were trying to find out whether or not the UK selling half of their gold was a bad idea, because Gordon Brown's argument was that there was no more boom and bust. So we wanted to go see if it was, you know, if everything was going to be stable, and why was the Bundesbank refusing to sell any of their gold? Why do they keep their 3,500 tons and refuse to sell it? And of course, this is the moment, the day we were there, was the exact reason why a nation should hold on to gold, was because of utter economic and financial collapse.
Yeah, well, we saw something similar happen in terms of the Wall Street bankers' ability to corrupt the gold market and corrupt the system. You know, it was just recently revealed that the COMEX, which is engaged in naked short selling of gold contracts as a way to artificially push the price down. You know, there's a rumor that they would have a run on the COMEX and that people would demand physical delivery, which would force the hand of the COMEX to basically, there would be a run on the COMEX and the price would shoot up. So what they did was they quickly just decided to change the law to allow them to settle up using these ETFs like GLD and these other ETFs that hold gold. So, you know, one of the things I learned on Wall Street, and I started on Wall Street in the early 1980s, is that you don't really think in terms of what's legal or not legal when you're in the banking business. Because if you run into a situation where the law is preventing you from making money, you just change the law.
You create facts on the ground, as it's now called. If you want to illegally occupy somebody's lands, you just start building houses and condos and shops and banks. And then by the time the international community gets around to doing something, they say, well, the facts on the ground are is that we have 100,000 people living there in a whole community. Yeah. You can't just tear it down. The same thing with Wall Street, which they just create facts on the ground as well. We have this whole system where everybody's accepting our GLD contracts as real gold, so why change it now?
Yeah, you need to change the law to accommodate the facts on the ground. So, I mean, that's the arrogance of a Wall Street bank, and the Washington Wall Street axis is that's the notion that they have, that they what they're doing is like the divine. They have this sense of divine right of really godlike moral rectitude, that whatever they do must be the thing that must be done, and if the law doesn't jive with what they're doing, it's the law is the problem. It's not keeping up with these divinely endowed bankers. So, I mean, this is something, you know, even when I started the Hollywood Stock Exchange, I just, you know, you meet people in Hollywood who would say that it's not right to trade stars on an exchange. It's, you know, you're trading people like cattle and this type of thing. But this is not the point. The point is that my idea is to create it first, and if the laws need to be changed, change the laws when they needed to be changed. The laws are nothing to hold anyone back. If they need to be changed, change the laws. That's the mindset. I mean, this is what makes America the country that it is. This huge, out-of-control lemming that's about to jump off a cliff.
Well, Max, what else is on maxkaiser.com? By the way, in case you're just tuning in, we're Max and Stacy, The Truth About Markets, and you're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM, in case you're lost on the dial. This is a good one. Lord Mandelson has come up with a new idea for gap year graduates. So I guess these are usually gap year used to apply to the people who, had graduated from high school and before they went to university. They would take a year off and travel around the world. So now they're saying, so these people have graduated from university, but there are no jobs available. So they're going to pay the taxpayer, i.e. the people who can't afford to work for free for a few months, and they're not part of the oligarchy class of state-funded television media and, state-funded banks.
Yeah.
They're going to pay for these gap year students to travel around the world.
Yeah? Why is that? Why is that?
Well, in order to avoid... Well, because they're going to either... They're going to have to pay them to be on the dole anyway. So they reckon that they'll pay them instead to go travel to Central America or Africa and go experience things, and maybe that will help build up their CV in a way that won't their resume won't be built up by being on the dole back in the UK where there are no jobs available.
No, that's retarded.
It's also taking jobs from a third world country. So you're paying them to go there and help work for free, like feeding, giving them food or digging ditches and stuff. So what do you? So basically, a whole bunch of slave labor is coming into these third world countries.
Well, it's stupid because groups like Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, Amnesty International, Reporters Without Borders, Doctors Without Borders, these are established NGOs that are doing great work around the world. The government should just give them the money to hire these people. They're just sending them out there without a purpose to pick their belly button lint and smoke it.
Well, it does sound like the agricultural subsidies, though. So you're sending these subsidized first world workers into the third world.
Well, what all these gap year students should do is immediately go down to Tasmania and volunteer for Sea Shepherd and join Paul Watson and go down there to Antarctica and kick those Japanese whalers' butt.
Well, I had to read the whole article because I don't know what it is, but I know Lord Mandelson is involved with this. So Lord Mandelson is...
Should put a chicken in his underwear.
Somebody should put a chicken in his underwear?
Yeah, Lord Mandelson. Doesn't he sound like a guy who would like to have a chicken put in his underwear?
That sounds bizarre.
He's just a guy you could imagine would take a chicken and stuff it in his underwear.
Okay, honey. Well, scroll down the page on MaxKaiser.com and see what other headlines we've been talking about this week, because I know we've been having a lot of conversation.
Yeah.
On the site.
Somebody thinks I'm developing a mullet hairdo.
Look, I saw that. I tried to fix
picture,
it.
Yeah,
that's because there was a wire wrapped around your head.
Oh, you're trying to kill me again.
No, it's your earpiece.
And it was attached between the toaster and me taking a bath. It's really nice, honey.
So,
how many failed assassination attempts have I survived being in this relationship?
Oh, you're such...
50? 60?
You know...
You're going to succeed one of these days.
Okay, well, I'm going to scroll down where you won't.
All
so,
right,
we've got...
Oh,
this was a good one this week. Oh, by the way, here in the UK, BT pension shortfall doubles to £5.8 billion.
Well, they're stupid.
No, it's going to fall on the taxpayer, the peasant taxpayers. Those ones that still are, you know, are still working.
Yeah, there's not going to be any pension money, and you're going to be forced into debt slavery. But in the UK, they don't care. As long as they subsidize and keep the price of beer cheap, you know, bread and circuses, that type of thing. You just got to give them cheap beer.
Well, apparently the beer is not cheap enough because... the pubs are all closing because of that.
Well, I mean, at some point the government's going to have to introduce price fixing, like in the Soviet Union, and force the price of vodka down. And, that's part of the 1984, I believe. The price of vodka was still cheap.
Okay, now here's another story, which is, again, part of this oligarchy divide happening.
So
you have the government-backed media, right?
Yeah.
Which, so all the taxpayers pay the license fee that goes to a group of Eton and Oxford and Cambridge and, you know, private school educated.
Loveys.
Yeah. And they all just give jobs to their friends and plum jobs.
Hooray, Henrys.
Yeah. And now you have these state-owned banks, which are doing the same thing. Now, here's a headline. UK savers withdraw most savings in 54 years from building societies.
Yeah.
So these are the, you know, the local building societies, in which they often have higher rates, deposit rates for your savings.
Yeah.
But because so many Brits are having to draw down on their savings because of the bad economy and not having jobs,
mm-hmm.
the actual pool of capital at these building societies is collapsing. So they actually use their you know, they're old-fashioned. They use their pool of savings to back mortgages, and they often have much better deals than the big banks. So now they're having to pull back on their loans and their mortgages, their good deals, because of the collapse in savings.
The democratization of credit is being destroyed on purpose.
So now you only have the big, too big to fail banks. Lloyd's owns about, 70% of the market now, 60, a huge percentage of the market.
And there's still conditions. I predict that for every £10,000 loan you get from the duopoly of lenders, they will also give you free vials of crack and heroin because they want you as screwed up as possible, and free vodka will come with that loan. And lottery tickets. You get
that sounds booze, like the Soviet Union.
Exactly. I mean, the Soviet Union went through it already, and they're coming out of it. That's why they're in much better shape than the U.S. or the U.K. And they have natural resources. They didn't squander their natural resources like the U.K., blowing through their North Sea oil reserves for this, to fuel a housing boom and bust. They're not stupid.
Well, plus they're also putting their stake on the Arctic Circle.
Well, they're in much better shape, you know. And that's the premise of Dmitry Orlov's essay, "The Collapse Gap." And we interviewed Dmitry Orlov on our TV show, "On the Edge," which will be broadcast next Friday, along with Dr. Housing Bubble.
Max, what are you talking about?
Today?
You're high. Didn't you just look at MaxKaiser.com? It's up there today.
Right. I got confused. Now, Dr. Housing Bubble, is he a U.S. or a U.K.?
Dr. Housing Bubble is in the U.S., honey.
The US,
remember,
okay.
We interviewed him in California. What is going on with your memory, man?
Well, we made next week's show already.
Yes,
Who's on next week's show? Was it just me and you, or did we have a guest?
Me and you, and then Philip Hammond,
to interview. Oh, yeah, Philip Hammond. Philip Hammond, he's the Shadow Treasury Secretary. He's a guest on next week's show, On the Edge.
Max is he's had one too many coffees. Your mind is
I don't have enough. I need more coffee. I need a coffee enema.
You're so French now.
Everything is a suppository in this country. You know, you got a runny nose, take a suppository. Got a headache, take a suppository.
Oh yeah.
We love suppositories over here.
What else is happening? Because we have 10 minutes left, but
really?
I really have to use the ladies' room.
No, let's see.
Oh, this is a good one. Bernie Madoff was interviewed this week, and by the some lawyers who were operating on behalf of the victims of his Ponzi scheme, and he said, "Well, you know, I was surprised that they didn't capture me sooner." Because he said, you know, the SEC, every single time they came to talk to me, I couldn't believe that they hadn't saw, you know, they sometimes brought up the very signs that there was fraud going on, and I can't believe they walked away without arresting me.
Yeah, well, it gets back to the magic chicken.
The magic chicken. Oh, my God, what is going on? You need a coffee.
No, that old Woody Allen joke, you know, about my doctor, my brother thinks he's a chicken.
Oh, yeah.
And the doctor says, "Oh, give him these pills." And the guy says, "What, are you kidding? We need the eggs." Something like that. So here you have the situation. It's there's fraud, but the people are addicted to... Okay, Bernie Madoff ran a huge Ponzi scheme, but it created so many fees for bankers that it was a necessary egg-laying chicken that to kill that they didn't want to kill the chicken. So the SEC... is part of the oligarchy, you know. It's a captured regulator, as many now know. As long as so is the CFTC and the FSA. So,
oh yes, the FSA this week, you know, they found after looking at the data that there was no evidence of oil market manipulation. Whereas in the U.S., the very same week, the CFTC came out with their recommendation that there was evidence of oil market manipulation. It's funny because...
Well, I mean, you know, FSA, you know, come on my show and debate me on this if you have any nuts. But I don't think you will because you're a captured regulator and you're never going to get into a serious debate. Jeremy frickin' what-his-name over there at Newsnight, Jeremy
Paxman
doesn't know enough about finance to ask you the intelligent questions that need to be asked. So you're never going to be in a forum talking to real people who know something about finance and answering real questions. So you're never going to be held accountable, the FSA, SEC, CFTC. They're never going to be held accountable because they never get in the... You know, why is Jim Lehrer from the NewsHour of PBS interviewing Ben Bernanke. Jim Lehrer doesn't know anything about finance or markets or Federal Reserve policy. You know, why don't you just have some six-year-old with a lollipop interviewing Ben Bernanke? You know, it's stupid. It's an insult. You know, it's absurd. But, of course, that's the way it is. It's a show trial. Getting back to the Russia analogy, it's like those show trials in Russia. This is the show media where they have some guy who's supposed to be interviewing Ben Bernanke. It's absurd. He doesn't know anything about finance or markets to ask an intelligent enough question.
That's
right. The
FSA
is never going to come on this show. I challenge them to come on Residence 104.4 and talk to me, but they won't because they'll be destroyed in 30 seconds. I'll do to them what I did to, Goldman Sachs on France 24.
Well, we actually did interview the FSA once, and we got exactly nothing from them. When we interviewed them for our Al Jazeera film about hedge funds, right, they had their PR person sit in with the executive and their lawyer. So yeah. they wouldn't let them answer any
questions. In the same film, we talked to that woman from Moody's,
yeah,
who inadvertently admitted that Moody's was completely conflicted when they're a rating agency and basically admitted that they were a captured rating agency.
Yeah, but she also had a lawyer and a PR person sitting in with them. But you know, that's the difference between the UK and the US, is the UK is not only out of oil, but you know, they don't have the reserve currency, and they don't also have the massive military that the U.S. does. So the U.S. doesn't, you know, they can afford to say whatever they feel like it. They could be more honest.
Well, they have British Aerospace. You know, they make a lot of weapons and they kill a lot of people, so that hopefully will sustain the consumer economy for a few more quarters.
Yeah, but that, again, that only exists at the behest of the U.S. If the U.S. wants it out of business, it'll take it out of business.
Sure, but, you know, the biggest client is Saudi Arabia, and the Saudis are in bed with the U.S. and Britain, and, you know, we know from the Prince Bandar episode, as the Financial Times reported, that Bandar was in Tony Blair's office threatening, quote-unquote, another 7-7 if he didn't call off the inquiry into the BAE slush fund. So we know who's buttering whose bread, don't we?
Yes, we do. So there's one other final story here. Speaking of this, you know, we've been talking about this divide between the oligarchy and the peasants. Union fury as civil service outsources jobs to India. Oh, there's another union story, too, that fits in with this, and that's the laborers union. Their pension fund received a huge loss because they were invested in Halliburton. And because while Dick Cheney was the head of Halliburton, you know, they got found to have been paying all those bribes to Nigeria. And so they recently had to pay like something like $700 million in a fine to the U.S. Justice Department. And as a result of that, Halliburton shares fell sharply. So this union lost a lot of money in their pension fund, and they're suing Halliburton and, I guess, therefore Dick Cheney. But so Union Fury, a civil service outsources jobs to India. More than 100 jobs at the British Council are to be outsourced to India as part of a massive cost-cutting drive to save the taxpayer money.
Well, again, this is faulty mathematics, because for every dollar you save on one side of the ledger, you're going to lose $1.20 in wages. Net-net, you're going to be losing 20%. You're going to be losing. It's a net loss. But since people are so incapable of having a thought that's not the product of a drug-addled, alcohol-sodden brain in the U.K., they can't put two and two together. They can only hear the sound of one hand clapping, and they think it's an orchestra.
Wow, that's very poetic, honey.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about your bladder and the need to empty it.
Well, that's why we're going to cut it out a little bit early here.
That's the thing. Ultimately, humanity, at the end, it all, everything has to happen in between. This can't be, nothing can happen that requires more time and energy than what the female bladder can hold in urine. Ultimately, that's the ultimate defining limitation
for a
human.
I just had two glasses of water and two cups of coffee.
Understood, you know, but I think that's, everyone should go on urine time. Female urine time, if everyone adopted female urine time, then it would be like being on the gold standard. Certain excesses wouldn't be impossible. No, people wouldn't spend 5 or 6 hours conspiring to commit fraud because they'd be on female urine time. And they'd have to, they can't come up with something in 50 or 60 minutes that would be as damaging as that something they come up with in 4 or 5 hours. So I think female urine time should be the new global standard of time.
What was that?
More so than it already is.
What was the fecal matter theory that you promoted on the other Truth About Markets show this week for Christchurch, New Zealand?
Well, you know, fecal matter is ultimately the collateral that Goldman Sachs is going to start using to float another multi-trillion dollar bond Ponzi scheme. I'm going to be talking about that with Alex Jones on Thursday.
Oh,
I'm going to be on
God.
Alex Jones on Thursday at 1 p.m. or was it 1 p.m. Texas time? Alex Jones, Max Kaiser on Alex Jones this Thursday, talking about fecal matter, bonds floated by Goldman Sachs. Plus, I got a new campaign I'm going to be talking to Alex Jones about, sending Goldman Sachs poop mail. Okay, it costs $9.95 to send somebody real dog poop in the mail. And if 2,000 people sent Goldman Sachs poop mail, then they would get 1 ton of dog poop delivered to 85 Broad Street in Manhattan. I'm going to be talking to Alex Jones about this new campaign I've come up with. Send poop to Goldman Sachs. Dog poop. It's real dog poop. Go to poopmail.com. They have real dogs pooping real poop. Then they package it in bags, and they send it to Goldman Sachs. We're going to send it to Goldman Sachs.
Patricia, how do you say poop mail in French? Poop. Caca?
Caca, courier de caca. Caca, courier caca de caca.
You see, we are useful. We're giving you summer French lessons.
That's right. That's right. And we're offering also for gap year, students can come here and throw Molotov cocktails at the authorities to understand what a real revolution looks like. But anyway, this is going to be new. I want 2,000 people to participate in the Goldman Sachs poop mail campaign because we're going to get 1 ton of canine poop delivered to Goldman Sachs' front door at 85 Broad Street in Manhattan. Enough, for, and they will use that. I'm trying to be constructive because they can use that 1 ton of poop to float 50 or 60 trillion of poop collateralized bonds that will refinance the global economy.
So you're trying to save the U.S. economy.
I'm trying to save the world economy. We have to, by saving the world economy, chip in $9.99 for a pound of poop and send it to Goldman Sachs at 85 Broad Street in Manhattan. I don't know what the zip code is yet, but I'm going to be talking to Alex Jones this Thursday. Start sending Alex Jones emails right now asking him to talk to me about the Goldman Sachs poop mail campaign I'm going to be talking about on his show this Thursday on Infowars.com.
Okay. Well, that's it for this week's Truth About Markets.
Female urine time is up.
Female urine time is up, and we'll be back next week.
Got your urethra.
We'll be back for 2 more weeks, and then I guess
uvula.
Resonance goes on.
Or is that your aviola?
Honey, just be quiet for 1 minute while I say goodbye.
Those are the niblets.
Okay, well, we'll be back next week. Same time, same place.
Is that mauve?
Say bye, y'all.
Yeah, of course. Hey, you know, I just remember something. You know what? It's actually mailpoop.com. Mailpoop.com. I got the name wrong. The real name is mailpoop.com. Okay? Bye, y'all.
M-A-I-L poop.com,
that's
right?
M-A-I-L-P-O-O-P, mailpoop.com.
Now you can say bye, y'all.
Okay. Bye, y'all.